Welcome to the Food Freedom Habit Podcast, where you can find freedom from food crazies using nothing but your own brain. With me, Lydia, the Lifestyle Coach. Would you like permanent food and body peace without tracking one trigger or calorie? Whether you're dealing with overeating, binge eating, bulimia, food obsession, body hate, or the endless diet cycle? We do all this without delving into past trauma, starting yet another food plan, or monitoring every meal. Live a free life aligned with your health and values. If you're ready for something real, you're in the right place. All episodes are 100% free, so please subscribe to and review our podcast. Hi guys, this is Lydia, the Lifestyle Coach, and we are ending eating disorders using nothing but your brain, no matter how long it's been, and no matter what you've been through. And no matter what your past is, and no matter what your circumstances are, just your brain. If you've got a brain, and you've got an eating disorder, which is binge eating, bulimia, overeating, food obsession, body hate, all of that, then you can be free and you can be done. And I am so excited for you guys to experience another freedom story of a real human person that has been through this journey and has come out on the other side free. And just such a cool human being that you guys get to know today. Like, she is a joy. She has been a joy in the group. She's been a joy pretty much, I'm sure, to anyone who's ever known her in life. Like, she's just an absolute light, and she has an incredible story, and I'm so excited for you guys to hear from her and for you guys to really know her. So without further ado, Kelly, hello, welcome. So happy to have you here.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And so excited for you to be able to celebrate your story. I mean, you have come so far and just gained so much insight and had so much life. And I'm really just excited to celebrate you. So let's go ahead and start off, and would just love to get to know you a little bit. Like, tell us a little bit about your origin story. Like, when does sort of your relationship with food or the lack of a good relationship with food sort of, you know, start in your life? And tell us a little bit about the origins of how this all began.
Okay. My mom's sister had a weight problem, and she eventually made her way into OA, and I was 12, and I had put on, you know, I was like 13X and the chubby clothes section. And, so she was following Gray Sheet at the time, and I went on the Gray Sheet diet at 12, and I lost the 15 pounds, and, you know, and guess what? It wasn't all butterflies and fluffy-tailed bunnies. It wasn't perfect, but I had lost the 15 pounds. And I was just remembering this today, that I went to have a candy bar, and my dad looked at me and said, "Oh, you were doing so good." And the next time I went to have a candy bar, I like got a glass you couldn't see through, poured it full of orange juice, shoved the candy bar in the glass, went to my bedroom, into my closet, like hid in the back of my closet, and like a little squirrel, like just in secret and filled with shame, ate that candy bar. And I think that was the beginning of the hiding and the, that food became my everything. Food became my companion, my friend. I could always count on it to be there for me. And no matter what I was going through, like, now I look at it, it never made anything better, but it sure seemed like it made it better in the moment.
Yeah. And that is just an incredibly powerful story of how that starts out, right? You know, it's like, yeah, some, like, if you guys ever think that you're doing someone a favor by, you know, telling them they shouldn't eat that, or, you know, saying, you know, like, you like that shame of, you know, oh, you're doing so good, or, and a lot of times we don't intend anything bad. We intend good things by it, but what that drives is secrecy, and that drives shame, and that drives hiding. And so I think that's such a tragic but beautiful example of how that all starts and how food becomes something that isn't just food, right? So right. From there, what, like, where did it sort of go from there? Like, what else were you experiencing, or what was it like to, you know, have an eating disorder and this starting so young?
Well, I was, some of it was hilarious. Like in the car, I had a binge friend, and we had Cheryl and Kelly piggybacks that had sporks, salt and pepper packets, ketchup packets. Like, we were armed and ready for binge, and they were in the glove compartment of the car. And we would cut school and go to the IGA supermarket, and we would buy massive quantities of food and go to the town park and just pig out. So I was 16, I was driving. But I mean, when I think about that, like, I had a binge buddy, and she had a similar home life situation as me. And, you know, we were like partners in crime. The only difference was I was an athlete and mine didn't show. My friend's did. She was very overweight. You know, I remembered something else today and I thought, oh my God, like, so I was in eighth grade and my nickname was Cow. And I would go up at lunch to get food, and this whole table of boys would moo at me. And I wasn't that heavy. I remember thinking, like, this other girl's really fat. Why are they mooing at me? And I'm in the, like, very fragile state of developing of what is it to be a girl? What is it to be feminine? What is it to be attractive? At my 10-year high school reunion, I went up to, like, the leader of the pack, and I said, John, I got to ask you, what the hell was that all about? Like, the cow and mooing at me. And he goes, oh, Doug had a crush on you. And his nickname was Bull. So we called you Cow.
Wow.
And that's like perception. You know, my perception was they're mooing at me because I'm fat. And I really wasn't fat. But like, that's why I thought they were mooing at me. It was so damaging. And then to have it completely be something else, I was like, I can't believe for, like, you know, 10 to 15 years, I saw myself through a lens that wasn't even accurate or real. Like, it just was something I made up in my head because I had to understand why were they mooing at me.
Yeah. And, you know, those sort of pieces of identity that we start putting together, especially when the restriction starts so young and we really don't, you know, we never had a sort of chance to have a normal relationship with food. Like, that sort of disordered eating was, you know, thrust upon us. And then all the things that we just start doing to try, you know, to hide. And you have such a powerful story that I've heard you share, Kelly, if you wouldn't mind sharing it here, of just like what you would do to sort of hide what you were eating, like with your family, just how much energy you were putting into navigating this.
Oh, yeah. I was an athlete. So during the athletic seasons for the sports I played, my weight stayed in check. But when I didn't have practice or the season was over, I would get home from school first. And I would put a pot of water on to boil. I would fill it with a pound of pasta. And then the water, you know, would come to a boil. It was getting close to the time my dad would get home. So I'd take the pot off, hide it in the cupboard. My father would come home. He would be hiding a fifth of scotch in the sleeve of his jacket. He would make his brown milk, we called it. He would then say, I'm going down to the bedroom to read, which I couldn't wait for him to get out to the bedroom where he was going to find his solace. I would then take out my pot of pasta, which had cooked while sitting in the cabinet, drain it, cover it with butter and cheese, and just eat out of the pot. I was in so much pain, and I just stuffed it down. And, you know, I was keeping the secret of the familial alcoholism, but I really look back on that now and see that that was just all a grand excuse. Like, my chatter took hold of that, and what better reason to eat? God, I, like, my heart breaks for that young girl. And then we'd get down to dinner and I'd be like this little bird unable to eat, and nobody could understand why I was like blowing up like a balloon.
Yeah.
And I did that every day of the week.
And the mental energy and all the things that we do to hide, and all of the shame that is just put on doing something so fundamentally human like eating.
Right. Eating was my distorted relationship with food. Food was not, it was no longer pleasurable. It was no longer, it was an obsession. It was tortured thinking. I was in a battle every day with cravings, binge urges, and just like I knew how I ate wasn't like normal, but I didn't know what normal was. And I just, it was like, it became my sole coping mechanism for everything.
Yeah. And it just like, it gets worse and worse. It gets bigger and bigger. It gets harder and harder. Like, it's just like, absolutely. So from there, Kelly, I mean, that was, you know, sort of childhood. It started early. Mm-hmm. Like, as you started getting into your young adult years, like, how did it evolve for you over the years?
I first sought help. I was 19. And, you know, it was restriction and deprivation, you know, 1700 calorie a day diet. And it was all about lose the weight. It was not about the relationship with food. It was about my appearance and that if I could lose the weight, then everything would be fine. And I've been thin multiple times in my life and everything wasn't fine. In fact, when I was thin, the real crazy started. When I became thin, then the food terror came into play. That's when there were forbidden foods. And then there were, like, I was terrified to eat because I didn't know what would set me off. You know, what trigger food? What was the danger, danger, Will Robinson? Like, what am I going to eat that's going to make me lose control? That's going to just send me off to the races? And, oh my gosh, there was good food. There was bad food. There was food I couldn't eat. My life became so small. Because I couldn't go anywhere, I couldn't do anything. I was so fixated on food. I never shared a meal with someone. I may have ate across the table from someone, but my focus was on what was on my plate. There was no pausing conversation, you know, there was no real enjoyable dining experience. And it was, you know, and those words were reinforced over and over, you know, like powerlessness, out of control. You can't be trusted with food, you know, sugar addict, food addict, all the, you know, that it was this addiction and that there was no way to get, you know, like phrases like walk the tiger three times a day. I remember that in OA. You know, abstinence, choosing abstinence. I was a chronic relapser, which just compounded the shame to the point where that was not an avenue I was willing to explore, which then led me to, you know, Weight Watchers, which I was a serial repeater there. Went inpatient for eating disorder, went outpatient for eating disorder. No one ever dealt with what was between the ears.
And it's like all this energy and all of this trying. And it's like everything that you do is like this new failure. Cause it's like, Well, I failed at that. So I'm going to do this thing now. And then I failed at that. And it's like, just keeps on, like you said, reinforcing that identity and that out of control and that you can't be trusted. And then every time you relapse, every time you get triggered, you know, it's like, and eating is something you're going to do over and over and over for the rest of your life. And if that's always a minefield, you never get a break. Like I remember like getting through a meal, right? Like getting to the end and feeling like maybe I'd be okay and knowing that now, well, I've got the stretch between now and my next meal and then I've got my next meal and who knows when it's going to be that mine that I step on and now we're out of control and now there's no choice. It's like, It never lets up because you can't stop eating.
You can't win. I remember there was a phrase 301, three meals a day, you know, one day at a time. And I called my sponsor and it was 11 o'clock in the morning and she was already in bed. And I said, why are you in bed? She goes, I already ate my three meals. be like, I can't be trusted. I can't be out of bed. But I mean, that was the, you know, and just that sense of that this substance, this fuel for my body wasn't fuel for my body. It became this, it was either this magical elixir that was going to fix everything, or it was the Antichrist and it was going to end my life. I mean, there was just no, there was no peace within me, within my mind, my spirit. It was the anxiety, the stress, going to a party or a social function. Oh my God. Like, oh, you have to eat the meal before you go because you don't want to eat like a crazy lunatic there. So you have to not go hungry. I can't even, yikes. It was awful.
You have to eat before so that you're not hungry. Right. And then when you're there, then you're right. So afraid of getting triggered. And then it's the last right. chance because you're about to not be there. And then you eat all the things and then you feel deprived. And then you get home right. and then you binge.
Exactly. And then you binge because you didn't eat the things you wanted because you didn't want anybody to think that.
Exactly. And then you know that everything that you ate when you were there was wrong because you had already right. eaten. So it can't be out of hunger. Right. Now it's just out of sheer yes. sin and filth and shame.
God. Yes. Yes. Okay. Take me out back and shoot me. But it's like, that's the, I was like, and I did the, you know, not for nothing, but there was a real despair element to this. I mean, there was a real, there was such a hopelessness. I was trying everything I could. And there was no fixing it. Like that was near, probably closer to the end before I came to beat the binge. I had been 11 years in Weight Watchers, weighing myself every day to keep myself in check, which didn't do anything. And, you know, the part-time job of Weight Watchers, meals and points and weighing and measuring and all that insanity. And it started to dawn on me about 8 to 10 months ago. Like I'd always been frustrated that the one thing, you know, that I liked the food part of the program there because there were no forbidden foods. It was just a budget and you stayed within the budget and you would, you know, the calorie in, calorie out mentality, but it wasn't really working for me. And the other side of that coin though, was that, the thing that they never really addressed, and only in recent years have they begun to, was what was going on in my mind, like the emotional component, what was driving me to food. And the irony is that the very restriction I was experiencing was driving me to the food.
And that's just something that is so, so difficult in this trap, is that most things that we do to try to fix this are the very things that are making it worse and worse. Like the way to have guaranteed your eating disorder get worse is to try really, really hard to fix it. Because once you start doing all this stuff, it's like, it's just putting, you know, like,
gas on the fire.
Gas on the fire. That's exactly, exactly what I was thinking. So it's just like, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so for you, just looking at a couple things here, Kelly, I mean, for you, what was it like sort of, you know, in your darkest days, like, you know, what did that feel like emotionally to be in the cycle with no end in sight?
I became clinically depressed. Like I had a major depressive episode. I was hospitalized and I ended up being, it was a teaching hospital and they were doing a research study on eating disorders and depression. So I participated in this study and I think back on this now because, you know, they controlled my food for me. We were locked out of the kitchen. There was 12 of us and we ate together at a table and we only had, you know, like food was prepared. Everything was, I had no responsibility with my food. So, you know, it's kind of like what people used to say about Oprah when she had her cook, like, oh, if I had a cook, I could lose weight too. You know, that kind of thing. Poor woman. God, I don't know any other human being that everyone knows what she's weighed her entire life. But, and I lost weight and I probably got to the lowest weight I've been in years. And this was in my late 20s. But the cost of that was really high. And again, there was no one saying, no one was working on any kind of, it was all about, if you continue to eat this way, you'll be okay. But if you have one cookie, all bets are off. You know, it was, again, controlling the substance as opposed to dealing with the behavior, which, you know, no one looked at it as a habit. It was all, it was disease. It was an eating disorder and it was an addiction and it was disease thinking. And, you know, most of what I experienced in those years was treating it much like they treat alcoholism. And it was the worst possible thing they could have done, looking back.
And how many years did you struggle with your eating disorder?
Well, if we go back to the very beginning, it's 45 years that I've been in a battle with food for 45 years.
Yeah.
The majority of my life.
Yeah. Yeah. How much do you feel like you spent, if you don't mind sort of like estimating for looking back? I know it's probably tough to, you know.
No, because I did that in one of the exercises. I think in our initial conversation, in the enrollment conversation or breakthrough, whatever. I'm going to say it's in the six figures. If you consider the inpatient and even the outpatient, you know, I've been in therapy, some form of therapy since I was 19, searching for answers. And I found there are a lot of things that got fixed, if I say that way, you know, like I had a lot of healing. I ended up having tremendous breakthroughs in forgiveness with my parents, with myself. You know, I got, you know, I matured, I grew, I came into my adulthood, you know, and relationships and financial, educationally, like I got a lot of stuff together with all that support. But the one thing that eluded me the entire time was food.
Yeah. And for you, just in that experience, you know, over your 45 years, I know that there's, you know, there's so much there. Like that's, you know, so hard. And I know it continues to get worse. So like when looking at that, is there anything else that's just on your heart, Kelly, that you would want to share of just what it was like to be in that place, what it's like to have an eating disorder?
You know, the thing that, there's always a story that I think of. I cry every time I think of it. My son was little and it was Easter time. And I got him a solid Fanny Farmer chocolate rabbit. And it was pricey and I was a single mom. And, you know, I was trying to do like a big giant basket and get all his favorite stuff. And 2 days before Easter, I had a binge and I ate the ears off his bunny. And I went to get him a new bunny, and there were no more bunnies. And, you know, do you give a five-year-old a bunny without ears? Or do you, you know, give him no bunny? And it's like, but I just think of that moment when I was sitting there, and I was looking at what I had done, and I couldn't, it was like I couldn't help myself. I was just... like I thought my emotions were going to kill me if I felt them, that that would be the end of me. I thought that food had turned against me. Food was no longer my comfort. Food was no longer my friend. Food was the enemy. It was a torturous existence. There was no joy. I was existing one day to the next, and so much struggle and battle, and just, and I felt like I was doing everything I could, looking for every solution. You know, I was reading Feeding the Hungry Heart and Fat is a Feminist Issue and Sugar Blues and Laugh It Off. I mean, I was like trying to get an answer somewhere, and there was no answer. And I felt, you know, you've said it jokingly, but I did feel doomed. I felt like, this is it. This is going to, I'm just going to have to, I'll have good days and bad days, but there's no fixing this. Yeah. There's no fixing me.
Because we take that all on ourselves, right? Well, I've done everything.
Yeah.
Everyone else succeeds at other things.
Right,
when
exactly.
Really they're just relapsing and they're
other people are abstinent. Exactly.
Yeah, like, yeah. And so it must be us, right? Like I know better, but I'm still doing it. So there must be something wrong with me. And what a damaging message that, you know, but when you don't know, like when you don't know that you can be free, when everything around you tells you that you're broken and diseased and that's the way it's always going to be. Well, how are we going to act? Right.
Right. Yeah. And that you're powerless and, you know, you're powerless over food and your life is unmanageable.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, I'm powerless over food. Who has the power then? Food has the power. You know, I, you know, gave food power that it didn't, that it's food. It's food. You know, food, like it's food. It has no magic powers.
Yeah. And I'm so excited to chat about what that's like now. But one thing that I want to visit before we make our heads in celebration, because there's so much of that to do. But Kelly, for you, what was it in this state of depression and hopelessness and 45 years, what was it for you that kept you going and searching so that you kept that hope to find the solution finally?
You know, I'm a seeker, I think. There's a spirituality or faith for me, and a lot of the healing I did, I could look around me and see recovery in other people. And I didn't always know what they were doing it or how they were doing it, but I saw other people finding answers. And I just felt like there's got to be more. This can't be it. You know, there is, I'm not going to remember the quote correctly, but it was on a Christmas Eve church bulletin. And it said, it was the quote along the lines of, you are not meant to live an ordinary life. You know, all of this is for you, and it's all extraordinary, and it's for you to celebrate. And there was something, the day that I saw that, I remember thinking, this is a wonderful life. Like, it's amazing. It's amazing, our world that we live in. And I just kept thinking, like, have you ever heard the story about the kid who's there's two boys. Two kids, doesn't matter, boy or girl, and they're put in a room with piles of manure, right? And one kid sits down and cries his eyes out. And the other kid picks up a shovel and starts shoveling. And when they interview the kids at the end, the kid with the picked up the shovel, he goes, with all this shit, I knew there was a pony in here somewhere.
Yep.
And I think that's part of it. It's like, I knew there had to be a solution.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think part of me healed enough to know that I was entitled to that solution too.
Oh, that's really beautiful. And so with that, all right, now we can do a happy dance and now we can do a happy dance. So then we got to connect and you found us, and I'm so, so glad that you did. And Kelly, just give us a picture of how things are different now. What does it feel like to be free? Like, what does it feel like to just have you back and life back? And I'll just let you take it from here.
I'm free. And what that feels like. Oh my God. Let me look. I made a little list today so I could share, so I wouldn't forget any of the good stuff. Let's see, where is it? Well, you know, I don't, God, incidents, coincidence, I don't even care how that webinar came to me. I'm just so grateful that I watched it and that I signed up for the one-on-one coaching session. And there were three things that were in that initial webinar. One was that there's nothing wrong with you, that it was an inkling that it started to dawn on me. I realized that some of the shame I felt about my very humanity, like I'm just a human being. There's no source of shame for that. You know, I should just live my life. So I stopped seeing myself as something to fix. And when that really hooked me, like there's nothing wrong with me. There's nothing to fix. The other, there's no wagon. You can't mess up. There's no wagon. So there's no wagon to fall off of. And I'm like, okay. And then the final hook was, you can eat whatever you want, as much as you want, whenever you want. And then I add wherever you want, because I had all these food rules about where I, you know, you can't sit in front of the TV and eat. You can't eat in the car. You can't, you know. So, I mean, I literally, within the first week, the batteries were out and the scale was away. The second week, I canceled my Weight Watchers membership. The third week, I binged, and it was like, I binged and I'm moving on. There was no attachment. There was no shame. There was no emotional. There was nothing. It was just like, yep, I just ate a whole lot of food right there. But oh well, moving on. Let's mine it for data and move on.
Yeah.
It was, I'm still pinching myself. Like, how did it, like 45 years and then 8 weeks. And I said it that one time in the Q&A, I was starting to ramp up in anxiety because it was getting near the end of my 8 weeks. I'm like, I'm not fixed yet, you know? And that's the whole perception. When I see it as an eating disorder and diseased mentality, then it's something I have to fix.
Yeah.
But if it's a habit, it's just something I have to work to change.
So what is different for you now? Describe freedom. Describe your relationship with food now.
Well, I had a little panic attack the first time I went to the grocery store. That was in my second week. And I was like, oh my God. You know, the conclusion is if I really can eat anything I want, I'll be big as a house by tomorrow. So I've had 8 weeks of eating whatever I want and I'm not as big as a house.
Look at that.
Amazing. So my first shopping experience, it was like all the forbidden foods, like the Nutella and the cookie butter and M&M's. I bought M&M's. They had all these flavors I'd never heard of. I was like, oh my God, I can have M&M's. And it was just so funny because it was warm one day and I had forgotten there was chocolate in between, in the thing between the car seats, you know, and it had melted and I just had to throw it away. And then the dog one day was sniffing all around my dresser and I forgot I had M&Ms like in the bag, like, cause I didn't want her to get them. I'm like, I forgot there was chocolate. Like, wait a minute. Not only did I not finish and consume the bag, I forgot it even bought the bag. For me to not like be consciously aware of where chocolate is in the house, like what? Unheard of. I started to know when I was full. I actually felt hunger, perhaps for the first time in my life. I'm not sure, but I actually was like, that's hunger. I started savoring things. Oh my God, I left desserts on plates. Like, I don't need to eat anymore. You know, like I started enjoying food again. Like the tastes and the textures and like I started cooking for myself again and really enjoying that. And the other thing was, is I had all this time. I still have all this time. It's like, the peace just in my spirit and in my brain is just, I haven't had such a quiet mind in, I don't think I knew my mind could be this quiet. You know, every day I would get off the exit on my way home from work and have to go through the gauntlet of fast Foodorama. And it was always make a right or make a left. You know, it was always there. Fries, 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 frosty, 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 you know, whatever it was. Dunkin' Donuts, whatever. The Taco Bell, it was always chanting. I just go home now. It's not even, I go to dinner with friends. And like, I was always a fast eater. It was like, I would inhale and it'd be gone. And I'd be like, you know, like everybody else would be. And my meal would be wiped out. I'm like the slow eater now. I'm like the one everybody's waiting for to finish. I'm like, I like put my fork down. I have conversations. It's all food now is about choosing. You know, I'm learning to eat. The other thing is too, is that I don't have that running dialogue of self-loathing hatred about what I look like, about my body, about, you know, like it's so simple, but I think we resist it. And a lot of it's being women in a culture that's so focused on our appearance. But you know, if your pants don't fit, buy a bigger pair of pants. You know, and like, so I don't know, the fourth week I bought a bunch of pants and I didn't really like them. So I sent them back and I kept shopping and I found pants I really like that fit and I'm comfortable in. And I love it. And I don't even care what the size, like this, that's the other thing. Numbers lost their power. When I stopped weighing myself, 15 years daily weighing, when I stopped that number, that lost all its power. What I weigh doesn't matter. That's like, what? Like, what?
And all those things that used to feel so scary, right? Like, oh, I couldn't have, you know, I couldn't eat what I want. Oh, I couldn't have pants that are comfortable. Oh, I couldn't possibly not weigh myself. All of a sudden, when you know how to make the brain changes so that you can actually be free as opposed to just perpetuate this, like, you said, isn't it such a relief? It's like, oh.
Right. And you know what? Having Nutella in the house, like, okay. It's still in my house, like from the second week when I bought it. And I've never sat down with like a spoon and like, you know, it's just, that was like, I bought bread, this peasant bread that I love, because I really wanted to make the most use I could of the coaching. So I said, I'm going to put myself in really challenging food situations or what had been challenging so I can get the data. And I bought this bread that I absolutely love and hadn't allowed myself in forever. And one, I cut it into quarters because I live alone and I froze. So I had just one section and I came home and I was going to have it with the cookie butter on it. Like this was like, I was in forbidden territory here now. This was like, oh boy, what's going to happen? You know, like, am I going to wake up in a coma with like cookie butter drool all over my face or something? Like, what was going to happen? Like, I made a half a slice of toast. I put a schmear on it. I sat in the chair with a cup of tea and like savored every bite and was done. That was it. I didn't go crazy. I didn't like pick up a spoon and start shoveling food. Like, I had a piece of bread with cookie butter. Like, I wasn't off to the races. I wasn't powerless. I didn't then run to the store and buy, you know, 8-pound bags of M&Ms and start throwing them. Like, it just, I threw out stale brownies. I baked brownies. Hey, not only did I not eat the whole pan, like they got stale in the container and I threw them out. What?
Superpowers. Superpowers.
Super, give me a cake already.
Yeah, so beautiful. Kelly, I'm celebrating. And you showed up. You did the work. Like this isn't, I just, because, you know, for those who are just looking for, you know, hope and a solution, like they probably don't have the context of like, this is not some magic words that I gave you to chant. This is not, you know, a magic wand or a band-aid or a silver bullet. Like you did the work that we were showing you how to do. And you showed up and now you have superpowers and you can forget about brownies and you can throw away stale brownies and you can have your brain back and like shine your light in the world and have your message out there, because now you're not like, well, I'll do all those things once I fix this thing.
Oh, my life is no longer on hold. That's it. I'm living my life today. I had something happen at work and I was upset about it. Like, it was something that really shouldn't have happened. And normally I would like obsess about how, like, oh, the chatter would go crazy. I just sent an email and I said, listen, in the future, you need to give me more notice before, you know, if you want me to do this. I didn't like, no, like, I showed up for myself. I spoke. I wasn't worried about it. I just put it out there like everybody else does in the world. You know, it's like, but, and so yes, let's take care of that misnomer. This is not without work. I mean, but you do the work. It's not terribly difficult work. It really wasn't. It was, I mean, I think probably one of the most beautiful things and unexpected surprises for me. For the longest time, I thought that that kind of running voice in my head that was so super critical and hypercritical, I always attributed that to my mom. And I realized it was just the chatter. It wasn't my mom, you know? And so to be able to reclaim like my mom from like the negative clutches of being this like, you know, harpy critical woman was really lovely. So that was a really nice surprise.
That's so beautiful. And, you know, of course, after 45 years to be free from an eating disorder, that on its own is really cool. Don't get me wrong. But Isn't it beautiful how that's just the tip of the iceberg? Now there's how you navigate your brain. Now it's reclaiming, you know, how you feel and your life and not having your life on hold. And it's just like, so many times we put the cart before the horse. We say, well, I've got to fix everything in my life and become the perfect person and resolve all my issues. And then my eating will fix itself.
Right.
But when in fact, we can fix our eating and then we have our brain back and then we can start living our lives and we can start developing ourselves. And it's not like for this other thing. It's just because we want to live a great life.
Yeah. Right. Right. And it's there. It just, and you know what was incredible too was to do it in a group setting where people are in different stages is just amazing because the whole time you're seeing people ahead of you who are experiencing freedom or pitfalls or whatever, you know, you're seeing people coming behind you like, oh, I remember when I was there. Yeah. And then you're going through with people who are right where you are and you're able to support and encourage. And you know, it's, if there's anything I could say to, you know, future people who are going to give this a try, jump in with both feet. 8 weeks goes really fast. And I was really glad, like, I laughed because the one, I do have a people-pleasing aspect still to my personality. And it's so funny because it took me probably 2 weeks to realize there were people that were on that weren't doing the polos. And I was like, that was a choice. You and Miliana told me get on and do a polo. And I did. And I didn't stop, you know, it was like, oh, okay, let me go on and do the first thing, you know, like it just cracked me up. So
you showed up and you did the work. Yes, you did all of it.
And
yeah.
If anything else, suit up and show up and just keep suiting up and showing up because, you know, it's not, I mean, there's the financial cost, but there's also the continued cost. Like you don't have to suffer anymore. Like that's the thing. I wish I could just shout it from the rooftops to everybody. Like you don't have to suffer anymore. There's a way to be free.
That is beautiful. That sums it all up. And we are celebrating you, Kelly. And what an incredible thing to be free, to not have to suffer, to get to just experience your mind how it was meant to be experienced with calm and peace and presence and just move forward.
Yeah. That's, you know, you say that about presence. That's, I spent so much time trying to fix yesterday or projecting into a future that wasn't guaranteed to come. And, you know, in week six, I had started to develop a meditation practice before joining Beat the Binge, but that just reinforced it. And to be like right now, you know, and to be eating this bite of food, not anticipating the next bite, you know, like to just swallow to get to the next bite, but to really be in each moment is just amazing. It's just, it's like, it's my life and here it is. And, you know, I could easily, the chatter could easily convince me like, oh, you wasted all that time. Why didn't you do this? You know, it's not even like I'm here now. And I'm so grateful that I found this now because I could have gone the rest of my life with it eluding me, with the solution eluding me.
Yeah. Oh, Kelly, I'm so thrilled for you. I'm so excited for you. I'm so proud of you. And thank you for sharing yourself and your incredible truth and journey and story. And we're here. We're, you know, just so
the opportunity
to that partner with you. You know, it's just like, it's such a cool thing. And anything else on your mind for today? Like, you know, there is going to be somebody who's going to be watching this, looking for hope and thinking like, oh, that wouldn't work for me, or, oh, I can't do that, or I don't have hope, or like, because they're not on the side of freedom. Like for somebody who is just really wanting to be free, but they just, you know, don't know that they had that hope. What would you say to them?
What do you have to lose?
That's beautiful.
Just try it. You know what? It's 8 weeks. It's not a long time. I would be shocked if it didn't work for you too, you know, for whoever's doubting it. But really, what do you have to lose? You have everything to gain. And all these stories, all these recovery stories, were real people. Like that was the thing when I looked, because I gave myself 24 hours before I committed. And I looked at those recovery stories that night. And I was like, these are real women. These are real people. And, you know, the funny part is that none of this is about weight loss. Like, you know, like none of it's about, can I say it's not about food? Because it's really not about the food, sort of. You know what I mean?
You're just ending the habit. I mean,
right. it's really, it becomes
anything. You're just ending the habit. Yeah.
It's like, that's all, you know, and whatever my set point weight's going to be, whatever, but like, you've got nothing to lose. Try it.
And anything else on your mind for today, Kelly, that you wanted to share just in your story and your experience?
I don't think so. I'm trying to think of just the, there's no need to do this perfectly. All it takes is the willingness to see it differently. And if you can look at the whole thing through a different lens and just shift the focus from, you know, being this disease distorted, binging, whatever, to that, because there is an identity that we hold and there is kind of a grieving process of letting go of that person. Like who am I going to be if I'm not this mess? Do you know what I mean? Like,
oh, absolutely.
Who am I going to be? And you're going to be this incredible, marvelous, wonderful person you already are.
I'm so glad you bring that up, because that is something that comes up. And I mean, we have helped hundreds and hundreds of people to be free. And I have never once heard somebody be like, man, I liked myself more when I had an eating disorder. Oh man, like, I just want to go back to that. Like, everyone always likes freedom more. Everyone always likes who they are more when they're free and clear and at peace and empowered more than enslaved. Yeah. So, yeah, that's beautiful.
You know what's really? Here's the thing, right? It's like at the end of the 8 weeks, if you want to go back in to Ed, we've been calling him Ed, like we broke up with Ed. But if you want to go back to eating disorder, Ed, you're welcome to do that. You know,
you can do anything you want. That's really what it comes down to, is just learning how to do anything you want. And if you don't want to have an eating disorder, you don't have to have one anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's it. It's like we're all trying to find a way to be free of that. And I don't know. It's not so it's almost ridiculous in its simplicity. It really is. It wasn't, you know, call out the chatter, mine the data, show up.
Yeah. And I feel like a lot of the most beautiful things in life are. They're not that,
you know, you're right.
That complex. They're just like, they're very simple, but but you've got to know how to do that. And you've got to have the help to know how to do that. And you've got to be able to put that into your life. And you did that. Right. And I'm so proud of you. And we're celebrating with you, and congratulations, Kelly.
Thank you
for sharing your story. And you guys, like Kelly said, like these are all real people. It's so funny. I was talking to someone the other day who's, you know, now, getting free and part of the program. And she's like, it just came down to, there's no way that Lydia could be paying this many people to like be actors to like say just those. I'm like, oh yeah, like that would be really weird. I never even thought of that. But it's just like, yeah, like we're real. They're all real people.
Real people coming to you live from our kitchen. I was afraid. I gave the dog a bully stick so she wouldn't be whining and barking.
that's smart. But if you guys want to do the same thing that Kelly did, I mean, like, we're here to help you, and we're here to help you to have that freedom. And you don't have to know that it's going to work for you or know that it's the right thing for you. And it might not be a fit. I mean, you really might not be a fit. And that's good data to know anyway. But what we do for those who are committed to really wanting to get this figured out and to end this is we do a free session. It's called a breakthrough session, where we really get clarity on exactly what's happening and then what your vision of freedom is, because you've got to know some certain foundational things to even know what the approach is. It's like you have to understand what's going on before you understand how to fix it. And we've got to know that too, to know if we can help you or direct you to somebody who's a better fit. So thank you so much for being on and sharing your story, Kelly. I'm so excited for you. And this is Kelly and Lydia, the Lifestyle Coach, signing off. Bye, guys.
Thanks for tuning in. If you felt a spark here and want to see how these principles can work in your own life, here is your next step. Pop over to lydialifestyle.com/session. That's lydialifestyle.com/session, where you can book a free session with our team. We'll give you a call and together find clarity on three things. 1, the exact cycle you keep getting sucked into. 2, what isn't working with your approach. And 3, what's missing to close the gap between food prison and food freedom. We have helped free hundreds of women all over the world from their food struggles. These are proven principles that work, no matter how long you've been stuck. This is Lydia, the Lifestyle Coach, signing off. Mwah! Thank you.